Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor in your window, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Bruno Barron, Nick Kacharubis, Kitty Kurth, and David Masiotra. Our program tonight, coming from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our phone lines are open toll-free at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo. And, of course, if you want to join us on the World Wide Web, radio and television, you can go to our website, beyondthebeltway.com. And, again, we have 232 days to go before Election Day. And since we last met, there was a big Tuesday last week. It was a big night for Donald Trump. It was a big night for Hillary Clinton. And so they took two giant steps forward for their nominations. But again, there's been so much said and written on this day when President Obama just landed within the last couple of hours in Havana. So the president, first time in 90 years, a U.S. president is in Havana, Cuba. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the broadcast. But again, focused first on what is happening primarily in the Republican Party, and that is the efforts by establishment Republicans to stop Donald Trump from getting the necessary delegates needed for the convention coming up in July. So we're going to talk about process. We don't have not specific candidate advocacy this evening, although Bruno Barron, I want to start with you. You're with the Heartland Institute. You're a libertarian Republican. The last time you were on this program, you were sort of between Kasich and Rubio.
Right.
You've not been a Donald Trump supporter.
Nope.
But on Election Day, you were elected as an alternate delegate from Illinois for John Kasich.
Yes.
So you're going to go to Cleveland. You're going to see one heck of a show. I'm going to predict that.
Okay.
But tell us how you feel about the likelihood of a stop Trump movement from succeeding.
It's hard to say. I mean, I wish everybody who's had their crystal ball out this cycle has been proven wrong. I thought Trump was not going to go very far when I first started watching him speak, so I wouldn't want to make a prediction. I think let's put it this way, if Donald Trump gets to 1237 delegates, I think he's going to be the nominee. I don't think they can take it from him. I mean, if anything they tried to do would seem like dirty tricks. And anything, let's put it this way, Trump supporters are going to, if Trump doesn't win the nomination, Trump supporters are going to say it was all dirty tricks. But the fact is that there's ways that, you know, he doesn't win on the first ballot, and then people give speeches, they go back and forth, they do some new votes, and, you know, Cruz could end up winning, Kasich could even end up winning under some, you know, less likely scenarios. So the hardest thing in the world to predict is what's going to specifically happen, but I do think that as long as it's not seen as like a really raw backroom deal that strips somebody of their quote-unquote deserved candidacy or nomination, then it'll go forward that
David
way.
David Masiotra, I want to ask you, you're for Hillary Clinton. You're also a writer, a columnist. Look across the aisle and give us your view of what happens in Cleveland if so many of the people that are there for Donald Trump, many of whom are there for the first time, many who are part of an expanded enthusiasm within the Republican Party. What happens if they don't get their way?
The Donald Trump phenomenon is a nightmare for the Republican Party, but it's in many ways a dream come true for Democrats. If Donald Trump is not the nominee, it seems rather unlikely that Trump's demographic, which is low educated, low income, and a group that historically...
Not exclusively,
but majority.
That's
a group that generally does not vote and has not voted. So he is correct when he brags about bringing new people into the party, but at the same time, he's pushing so many people out the door. He's alienated so many women, so many Latinos, so many independents, that if Trump doesn't get the nomination, chaos might ensue. But it will allow Hillary Clinton, the likely nominee, to stroll into the White House.
Nick Kacharubis from DePaul University, the last time you were on this program, I believe you said that you were one of those. I think you were the only one on the panel that night who said you thought that Donald Trump could still win. Do you still believe that?
Win the nomination or the presidency?
Win the nomination.
Yes, I do
believe. Win the presidency.
I think Well, as we have seen in this interesting election year, Donald Trump has time and time again won races in states where people said, no, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. He's going to be stopped. So I think it can happen? I would never say it couldn't happen. But I think it's more likely that he will be able to get the nomination at this point based on when we look at the numbers. He's way ahead in delegate counts. He's got almost 700 delegates of the 1237 that he needs.
Kitty Kurth joins us. She is a media strategist working primarily for Democrats. We're going to talk about what's happening in the Democratic Party, but I want you to look across the aisle. You're also a media person.
And I work at the Democratic Convention every
right.
4 years.
That's right.
So I've had a little bit of experience with rules, and it's going to be odd that this year the Rules Committee is going to be the most exciting place to be at the Republican Convention.
How can – if Donald Trump goes to Cleveland and he is – let's say, as he's suggested in recent media interviews, if he's maybe, let's say, 100 or 50 votes short, how does he not pull it off?
Well, it would be tough. And I will remind you that the last time I was here, or one of the – recent times, I said Donald Trump will never actually run because he won't actually file his financial disclosure forms.
You did. And thank you for remembering
that. I was wrong. So that said, I agree with Nick that even though on paper he should not be able to win X, Y, or Z states to win the election, I'm not going to say it's impossible. I think it's highly improbable. But at the convention, I think if he gets close – there are a lot of people that don't know how you're supposed to behave at the convention who are going to be there for Donald Trump. And I think if he gets close, they have to do something to give it to him.
What's going to happen?
I'm going to the convention, but I have not been to a Republican convention. I've obviously watched, but what you see on TV isn't what's really happening a lot of the time. So, again, for me, it's really hard to predict. But I will say this. I don't. Short of Hillary getting indicted in the middle of a election year, which might happen but doesn't seem very likely. Some people say there's nothing there. Other people say there is. Short of something like that or some horrible terror attack that can be blamed on an existing party and administration, I don't see Donald Trump winning. I mean, he anybody he brings into the party – he's creating at least one or two or two and a half or one and a half people who – will never ever vote for him.
Well, I'm going to jump in here, and I agree that if Donald Trump does not secure the 1237 that he needs, is that there's a high likelihood that some other deal would be cut. But if he's only 50 to 100 delegates shy, and that's what you were originally proposing, you know, you're talking about the master deal maker. I have a feeling that he's going to be working some sort of deals before to get his 1237 before he gets there. And if that's the case, I think all game is over at that point.
And think about, you know, our party, the Democrats, they always say the Democrats fall in love, the Republicans fall in line. You know, Republican Party activists are pretty good at, like, okay, this is our nominee, now we're going to back him and we're going to do.
Well, I don't know that. I don't see that.
An organized effort like this.
I don't see that happening.
Maybe with the exception of Goldwater in 64.
But I don't know how you deny him the nomination
right.
if he's got the 1237.
And then are they going to come and vote for Hillary? I mean, we'll welcome
that's
one and all.
No, but if they stay home.
That's the next piece. Just like the other pieces are those that are supporting Bernie Sanders, are they going to vote for Hillary? A lot of things going on here once we open up the polls. We're opening up in the phone lines first, 1-800-723-8029. From coast to coast and border to border, I'm Bruce Dumont.
Eight years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8029. One thing I would like to talk with everyone about, and that is, you know, over or pretty close to 50% of the people don't vote. All the polling that goes on are likely voters, and they do this, and then you come up with the polls, and most of the recent polls, if not all, have said that Hillary Clinton would beat Donald Trump. But what about, if Donald Trump is the nominee, what about the 50% of the people that don't vote? What would motivate them? It seems to me they would be more motivated to come out for either Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders. I don't think they're going to be motivated to come out for Hillary Clinton.
Well, it's always it's easier to motivate people to vote out of a negative from a negative perspective than from a positive perspective. So I think people could be motivated to come out and vote against Trump. That said, I think the bigger problem is when Dave touched on earlier, there are a lot of Republicans, including most of the people that I know who identify as Republicans, who would not be really excited about a Trump candidacy. And what do they do is the big question. Do they hold their nose and vote for Trump? Do they stay home? Do they vote for Hillary? What do they do?
Does a third party, in your view, Professor, does a third party ensure a Hillary Clinton victory?
I think it makes it much more likely if there's a third party candidate.
No, what do you think? You've touted the concept of third parties for a long time. Is this the moment where that comes to an end?
Because I'm biased in favor of a third party, whether it temporarily or permanently succeeds, I'd say yes, this would be the perfect time for it. I mean, Trump has essentially proven all of the premises I thought I was going to have to write about in my book that I never wrote. Mm-hmm. I mean, he essentially just walked in and took over the GOP in a hostile takeover by getting people to come out and vote for
why is it a hostile takeover?
Because most of the people in the party don't really want it, but a very, very dedicated minority have come out. I mean, first of all, Donald Trump straight up against any one of the candidates doesn't win a single state. If it was just Trump versus Bush or Trump versus Kasich or Trump versus even Christie or something, he wouldn't have won a single state.
He hasn't broken 50%.
The problem is not Donald Trump's. The problem is the inability of the Republican Party and their establishment to get together and coalesce around one person. Just as it is the actions of the Republican Party in Congress that has created and fueled the irate response from the Republican base coast to coast. That's why we have Donald Trump.
Donald Trump has been able to turn out, whether we like him or hate him, he's been able to turn out voters, new voters, to get out there that aren't typical voters
because
to vote for
Because he says
him.
Something.
He does.
He stands for it.
Donald,
and he doesn't back away from
60%
it.
60% of Donald Trump's supporters, according to various polls, don't believe Barack Obama was born in the United States.
And
you know what, David?
Two-thirds.
David, they can still vote.
But my point is that two-thirds love his ban on all Muslim immigrants.
Right.
So it's a combination of ignorance, bigotry, xenophobia. It's a very unattractive combination.
But there's this portion
of the electorate that's always existed, and that at certain points in Republican Party history, Nixon and the Southern Strategy, the party has winked and subtly nodded to, but kept at an arm's distance for obvious reasons. And Trump is overtly marketing and campaigning directly to them, and that's excited them.
And
I don't think you can lay it at the Republican Congress.
It is exactly the same.
Part of it.
It's exactly the same profile of people who are entering the electorate for the first time in France and in Sweden and voting for Marine Le Pen and voting for the Sweden Democrats. And it is quite literally the same voter profile in England voting for the UKIP party. Mm-hmm. It is this people who are not normal voter or not regular voters. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't mean normal. Not regular voters who are motivated out of hate, not out of some.
So what percentage of the 50% of people that don't vote, or a little less than that perhaps, what percentage of those people could be motivated by what Donald Trump is saying, because they're not being polled right at
probably
this moment.
Probably at least another 10, adding to what he's already got, which is maybe 30%.
See, and one of the reasons I think this is the perfect time for, and quite frankly, you have to ask yourself, well, who would the candidate be? What would this party do? You can't. Perot just went in there and said, "I'm an independent," and he pulled in 20% of the vote. So talk about if you're going to really talk about the strategy of what it would take, like how does an independent or how does a new third party get elected? First of all, it has to have money. Second of all, it has to have at least some name recognition. So once you put those things on the table, you're looking at maybe 5 or 10 names across the country. Romney could pull it off. Paul Ryan could pull it off. Maybe even Jeb Bush could pull it off. Kasich could pull it off because he's already been in the party, but he might not be able to run in some states.
Tom Coburn, Rick Perry. Those are the names in the New York Times.
Rick Perry and Tom Coburn could do it. Tom Coburn would be a fan.
They could do it.
Well, but then they have to have a specific strategy, because Perot took 20% of the vote, didn't win a single state. How do you get past the Electoral College? So what you have to essentially do is you have to essentially get in there, get on the ballot in as many states as you can, but then you need to deny Hillary 270. And the way you deny Hillary 270 is you run almost exclusively in Florida, Virginia, Ohio, Colorado, and maybe you do Pennsylvania and Michigan if you think you can pull them. That's the states that they think Trump might do well in. But then if you can deny Hillary 270, then two things happen, and this is where it's so important for people to think about this. If it's only Trump versus Hillary, even the GOP House is in jeopardy, because I think the reaction against Trump is going to be stronger than any reaction.
Oh, yeah, the down-ticket effect.
The down-ticket effect is going to kill them. But if you have Trump versus – and I'll just use Romney as a placeholder. Maybe Coburn works, but Romney has more name recognition. But if you have Romney, Trump, Hillary – all of a sudden, you've got someone who's already run. They've got name recognition. They've got money. If they can deny Hillary 270, what's the GOP Congress going to do?
I think you've got it exactly backwards. In a scenario like that, they would be denying Trump votes, and Hillary would waltz right in just like her husband did.
Theoretically, but what we're assuming here is that it's all – that the Democrats aren't touched at all and no one does anything, whereas there's plenty of Democrats who are going to vote for Trump.
Here's the
question.
No,
that's actually not
Here's
true.
The question.
So that's very not true at all. Some.
It's
less than 1%.
Let me ask you this one question. Does that third party alternative, in your view, David, does it have to be right of center or left of center? Not way right, not way left, but where
or
on the
political – Or is it Michael Bloomberg, the one person who's actively exploring it?
Who said he doesn't want to do it, but where do you
That's
put it?
That's not what he's doing.
In this election, if it were Clinton versus Trump, it could be either left of center or right of center, because Hillary Clinton, although many right-wing operatives and Republicans have depicted her as, you know, the wife of Karl Marx, is actually a pretty centrist, moderate Democrat. And that's how Bernie Sanders is pulling some enthusiasm and support out of millennial Democrats and further left Democrats. So if there might be an opportunity for a Nader-like candidate, or if Sanders went third party in this particular cycle – but I don't think the likelihood is very high.
I think to stop Trump, it needs to be right of center.
Of course,
if we're looking at stopping Trump and denying Hillary, it needs to be right of center. Bernie Sanders is already speaking
to the left.
I
don't think any of the names that Bruno just mentioned would fill that bill.
I don't see that.
I don't think Romney would.
And in any way, it just makes it easier for Hillary to run again in a three-way race against Trump. It's her game.
Lindsey Graham this morning said he would rather lose this election than concede it to Trump. So if there are more Republicans who share his feelings that they would rather sacrifice this election to the Democratic nominee, likely Hillary Clinton, and try again in 4 years, then a third party candidate Perry or Coburn would stop Trump. Let's regroup next time.
I can't believe there are many Republicans that believe that.
Well,
because of the Supreme Court situation, I don't think
they hate
Republican
so much.
Look, if Trump is the nominee,
I'm
beginning from a couple of different premises. Maybe people agree with him, maybe they don't. If Trump is the nominee, you're not costing Trump any election. You're not costing Trump or the Republicans anything, because if Trump is the nominee, Trump is not going to be president. So
I'm not sure I'm ready to say that. The data confirms, and I can rattle off why,
but that's a good – it's a worthwhile debate. I'm not saying I've seen a crystal ball or anything like that. But here's the other thing. if you're really serious about preserving something out of the debacle that Trump is doing to the GOP, and you're trying to quote-unquote save the GOP, you need to have a third party, whether it's Romney or Coburn or somebody else. You need to have somebody in there to do one thing and one thing only, and that's bring out all the voters, all the Trump voters, all the Hillary voters, all the middle voters who are considering not voting for Trump to preserve the Senate and the House. And quite frankly, if you had a Romney candidacy, even if it lost, even if it didn't win a single state, I would predict that the GOP keeps the House and Senate because it gives something for people to vote for.
That makes sense. And, you know, Trump – we keep talking about the data on Trump, and I completely agree with you. The data says that he can't win. That said,
he wins. That's where I keep going back to the fact that
he's winning in a crowded field with only 35%.
Here's Hillary's problem. If I could just
let me just ask one. If there's a real reason, and I think you'll vouch back me up on this. There are Democrats, a lot of Democrats, that are really worried about Donald Trump, and they're worried not just because he's going to win the Republican nomination. They, in their hearts, believe that he can win because of this 50%. The one thing, whether you're a member of the Republican Party or the Democrat, the establishment of both parties, the thing they fear the most is a massive turnout. They
never
don't know
happened.
Who's going to happen.
It's never
Bruce,
happened.
You know,
of course it's never happened.
I spend a lot of time in Europe, and I have watched the steady rise of the parties on the right in Europe, in countries like Sweden, where people said, it can never happen. It can never happen. And guess what? 4 years ago, they were at 3%, and now they're at 24%, and they have seats in Parliament. It can happen. And the people who don't vote could turn out.
1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway, the final word in Sunday Talk.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back. As you've just heard me say, we're going to do the delegate count right at the top of this segment. Wherever you're listening from coast to coast and border to border, nice to have you with us. We're going to go to calls in just a moment. This is the current Republican delegate count as of today. There are 1,237 delegates needed to win the Republican nomination in Cleveland next July. Donald Trump at the moment, 678. Ted Cruz, 423. Kasich, 143. And again, those numbers will go up in many cases this coming Tuesday for Donald Trump, likely in Arizona. And maybe Utah is a little more competitive. But those are the numbers to watch. And we'll give you an update, obviously, every Sunday night. We've got lots of people all on the line already. Let's head to Spokane, Washington, where Mike is listening to us on KXLY. Good evening, Mike.
Thank you, Bruce, for taking my call. And, yeah, I'm a John Kasich supporter. You know, he's a unifier. John Kasich has experience in foreign policy, particularly on military matters. Donald Trump says he respects China, a nation that intimidates other nations and imprisons Christians. Governor Kasich is a practicing Catholic and admires Mother Teresa. And Kasich says he is pro-Pope. Donald Trump has criticized Pope Francis over Trump's wall.
Mike, with all of those attributes that you view as attributes, why has he done so poorly thus far in this campaign?
Well, he won Ohio, as you know.
Well, if he didn't win Ohio, he should have, and he was planning to hang it up. So if you can't win your home state, that's, you know, a big issue.
Well, he's reaching people now. He has more time to reach people and talk to people, especially the poor, the independents, the Democrats. So he can reach out and beat Hillary Clinton.
You know what? I think you're right. I think John Kasich could be a victor in a general election. I just don't think he could get the nomination because there's too many people in the Republican Party that they don't want a touchy-feely Mr. Rogers candidate. And Kasich is coming across like that. Even though on paper I think he's wonderful.
I'm a delegate, so I agree. And, you know, it's like Jeb Bush said at the very beginning of this entire presidential race that you have to lose the primary to win the general. Maybe he should take his own advice, and maybe somebody like John Kasich should do the same thing. I just think that, like I said, if Kasich is the nominee, the GOP cobbles along for a few more years as it likely wins the presidency and has to work out its problems. But I think what we're watching right now is we are watching the split of a big party.
I hate to come back to the establishment again. But if the establishment really, really wanted to stop Donald Trump, they'd be rallying around Ted Cruz, and they just can't do it.
Because
they despise Ted Cruz more than they despise Donald Trump.
There are too many. Listen, I'm someone who identifies as slightly left of center, but I'm close to the center because there are many conservative ideas and principles that I feel are very important and very worthwhile of consistent consideration from our government. And our government tends to work best when there's a balance of ideas. Mm-hmm. But there are too many people within the Republican Party who are not open to negotiation, not open to compromise, not open to the work of governance. They're enraptured by either extreme religious ideology, like those are Ted Cruz's voters, or they have some xenophobic motivation bringing them to Donald Trump. And what we're seeing right now is the sensible people within the Republican Party trying to siphon off these voters who are could spell trouble for the party long term as a national party. The Republicans do very well on the state level, but in the national level, given the demographic changes, the cultural changes in the United States, it's going to be hard for them to succeed following this formula.
In many ways, they're reaping what they've sown over several of the last election cycles. They have tried to build up their base by going to the right. They keep going to the right, and this is what's happened to the party, and now they've gotten themselves behind a nominee that they didn't choose, but there's not a lot of room for growth in the center or the left.
Yeah, the party is Dr. Frankenstein, and Trump is the monster.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, the demographics are not really with them. You know, the demographics. So
I want to get back to Kasich and just say the one thing that I think I've appreciated about Kasich and all throughout this entire campaign, he's been the one candidate he has not gone negative. He's talked about issues. The problem is at this time, at this election, there is a very much an anti-establishment, an anti-elected official, particularly on the Republican side, but also on the Democratic side.
Bernie,
that is hurting Kasich.
Kasich also, I think, made a major mistake. When, you know, Donald Trump said he would not be at the Fox debate last night. And then Kasich said that he would not attend. Well, once he said he would not attend, they canceled the debate. It was absolutely foolish. Now, Kasich said today you don't have the debate without the big guy there. The point is he missed 2 hours of an opportunity to introduce himself to be compared with Ted Cruz on the same stage. That was, would you agree,
absolutely,
that was a horrible mistake?
Absolutely. I can't even imagine why anybody would make that kind of mistake.
When you're in a position like that, how do you say no to 2 hours of free TV?
Well, that's what I'm saying. He may not be as smart as some people think he does. And by the way, you've heard me say this. I've met Kasich on a number of occasions, and he is just a wee bit less arrogant than Donald Trump. Just a wee bit.
Well,
Jim, in Portland, Oregon, go ahead.
I'm just calling because I just can't believe what some of your guests are saying.
That's why we have phone lines. Great.
They're saying the same thing that was said about Ronald Reagan in 1980. And Donald Trump is putting together the same coalition that Ronald Reagan did. The blue-collar Democrats, the working poor, the whites. Donald Trump is going to win big in the Midwest. He's going to win Michigan. He's going to win Ohio, he's going to take Pennsylvania, and I think New York and New Jersey are in play. And he's going to win the other states where Republicans typically win, the South. I mean, Donald Trump has been very solid in the South. This is the area that where Ted Cruz was. This was Ted Cruz's firewall.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And Donald Trump just blew it apart. Donald Trump is very similar to Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was not a free trader. Ronald Reagan saved Harley Davidson. He saved the auto parts industry. He saved the electronics industry because he, number one, he put tariffs on, and then he used the threat of tariffs to bring the Japanese.
And when Ronald Reagan won and ran in 1980, he was not the establishment candidate. The establishment candidate was George Bush.
But he was also not a hater. Yeah. And Ronald Reagan was not inciting xenophobia. And he was, I mean, didn't we have amnesty under Ronald Reagan? I mean, he was not anti-immigrant in any way.
And Ronald Reagan spoke with a poetic grandeur. Donald Trump can barely put together a coherent sentence.
But it's deliberate. It's deliberate. The way he's putting...
All right, let's Jim. Final word to you, Jim. Go ahead.
Donald Trump is not xenophobic. He's really not. He's speaking what the American people know in their gut. Illegal immigration is destroying this country. Donald Trump is speaking the truth on it. That's not xenophobic. It's just not.
David, let's let David respond, Jim.
Illegal immigrants constitute about 3.5% of the American population right now. It's at its lowest point since the early 90s, and in the past 5 years, there's been a net neutrality in immigrants coming up from the Mexican border. To believe that illegal immigrants are destroying the country when they register at 3.5% and they're concentrated in about five or six states is either just factually on Mars or motivated by some kind of xenophobia. But the reason that Trump supporters can't get jobs, those who are unemployed, you know, many of them don't have any education. They're high school dropouts or they haven't gone on to get their higher education. It's not because of Mexicans coming up from the border. It's because of their own personal failings. You know, I agree with the conservative concept of personal responsibility.
Else.
Yeah, Trump allows them to deflect it
right
onto the Chinese villains overseas, or the Muslims overseas, or the Mexicans
or
coming
the
up from the border.
Well,
Muslims isn't about
isn't about
jobs as much as it is about security.
Right, you're right. Yeah, I'm conflating some of his points.
I think Jim is engaging in some perfectly valid wishful thinking that Trump is going to win this, and somehow he's going to figure out a way to win it all. But there is no information or data. When people talk about how well he's done, and he's been running against a widely split Republican Party in turmoil, and he has cornered a huge portion of that vote and brought out some new people because he's saying things differently, and it's all very clever. But when you compare the GOP primaries, where maybe 30% of the GOP electorate actually comes out to vote to choose those people, and then you compare that, you know, like winning in the minors, and then going up to the majors, where the media is not going to play fair. They're going to rip him to shreds. He's also going to be he's going to be in the middle of a. Very few people remember this or even think about it, but he's going to be called to testify in a fraud trial where Trump University is essentially a Ponzi scheme fraud institution, and he's going to be forced to testify on that. By the time this comes out, I'll make this prediction. Maybe this sounds even crazier than all other people. I think he's going to have trouble breaking 40%, and I don't think he's going to break 45.
But see, the other thing is, though, I don't think we've seen a all-out Trump race against Hillary. And I'm not saying that Hillary won't ultimately beat him, but he hasn't completely unleashed on her, which can bring a lot up. And, you know, it's not like she's not without her issues as well.
And it will be no holds barred.
And it will be a very dirty campaign.
Yeah. And what I haven't done, and maybe one of you guys have, is to look at the net number of votes that Trump has gotten so far. And is it more than Romney? Is it less than Romney? I assume it's less.
He's actually gotten 200. I actually saw these numbers in one article. He's actually gotten at the point of Super Tuesday, the first Super Tuesday. After that, he received 1 million some odd votes, and Romney was at 750,000. But he has received 1 million fewer votes than Hillary Clinton has in this cycle.
That's very important. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. Lots of callers on the line. We'll bring them in when we come back to Chicago.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to KLBJ, where Harold is listening to us tonight in Dallas, Texas. Nice to hear from Big D. Go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Dumont. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to say Trump is the only candidate that's not controlled by Israel and the Jews, and he's going to make America great again. I promise you that. And your guest is a milquetoast Zionist hack. He should be ashamed for supporting Hillary and all of these traitors.
Harold, I want to thank you very much for joining us, and we're going to move to Brian in Roselle, Illinois. By the way, Donald Trump is going to go before AIPAC, the Israeli lobby, tomorrow and give a major speech, and we'll see how he reacts there. There's been a lot of criticism of Trump because he has tried to equate Israel and the Palestinians in trying to broker a deal over there. So we'll see how he reacts tomorrow in his speech.
Can the milquetoast Zionist hack have one word here?
Sure, I think that was...
I didn't know which one he was talking about.
We're all milquetoast Zionists, right, apparently.
Perfect illustration of the typical Trump supporter, so I appreciate the call.
Let's go. Maybe not the typical, but at least one. Go ahead, Brian in Roselle, Illinois, listening to us on WCGO, one of our flagship stations. Go ahead.
Hi, good evening, everybody. You know, I do like the Trump candidacy just for the fact that he is making immigration an issue. It's a pet issue of mine. And what drives me crazy is people like your panelists to just throw out the term xenophobe, which is basically name-calling. I think we, as Americans, and every nation has the right to determine who gets to immigrate into their country and how many. This idea where we're just open borders and, oh, well, everybody gets in. Oh, you're a racist if you don't want to let everybody in. I think you're being childish. I think we need to address the economic issues that confront average Americans. You know, the truth is, we can't absorb everybody. There is a limit. Many Americans are hurting, and they're beginning to make the simple connection between high levels of immigration and declining wages. You know, we can reduce our immigration level. And you always focus on the illegal portion. Let's talk about the legal portion, the H-1B program. That's a big travesty. You know, we can dial down immigration. We adjust our interest rates and the money supply to keep the economy healthy. But we never talk about dialing down immigration. We don't need high levels of immigration infinitely. It's idiotic.
President Obama,
Brian, you probably think that we should be growing jobs and creating businesses, right?
Yes.
And you're probably well aware that entrepreneurs from other countries, that new immigrants create more jobs and create more wealth than Americans who are born here. And if you're not, you should probably look up the statistics on it.
I can't drive 2 miles without passing probably 10 taquerias, if that's the point.
And how is that bad? They're creating jobs. They're creating wealth. They're putting money into the tax structure. They're putting money into education. How is creating businesses a bad thing for the economy?
It's low-wage businesses. I bet most of those people that work at those businesses are on some type of government support program. I would bet you personally polled them?
There are no government support programs except for women, infant, and children's.
Brian,
so if they're not white kids under 18, they're not getting
money. Brian, listen, thank you very much for your call. We're going to move on. We have lots of callers. Let's go to Morgan listening to us in Palm Springs, California. Morgan, go ahead. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
So I heard you guys speculating earlier about what the non-voter population would do in this election cycle. And
yes.
Since I'm one of them, I'd like to chime in on that a little bit.
Okay. When was the last time you voted, or have you ever voted?
I have voted, and I'm happy you asked. I voted against George W. Bush the second time.
Okay.
And in this election cycle, I will get up and go to the ballot box if Ted Cruz wins the Republican nomination. I will vote against him.
Why?
Because I'm afraid of the religious zealotry that that I see in him.
Would you do the same thing for Donald Trump, or is he less scary to you?
He's less scary, and if he wins the nomination, I will not vote.
You will not vote. But the only one that will in other words, there isn't anybody on the Democratic side that would motivate you to go to vote, however.
Absolutely not, no.
Is there anybody on either side that would motivate you in a positive way to go vote?
That's a really good question. And, you know, I'll have to say, you know, as a non-voter, I don't pay too close attention. And but from what I've seen, John Kasich seems like a reasonable fella.
Yeah. Well, I think Bruno would certainly agree with, he would certainly agree with that.
I think you're a reasonable fella. I'm going to be in Palm Springs. I'm going to be in Palm Springs in the middle of April, so maybe we should play some golf.
Well,
maybe you can get him to vote.
I'm going to be there next week. Anyway, Morgan, thank you very much for being with us. Let's go to Sam at Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, Bruce. I just wanted to say that I think a lot of this Never Trump movement as another effort by consultants in order to raise money. You know, they go to the donors and say, if you'll just raise, give us this $25 million or this $50 million, we'll stop Trump. I don't think it's going to happen. And I think Trump is going to win the general election. I think it's going to be very interesting. I am so looking forward to Trump and Hillary, and I think he'll make Swiss cheese of her by the time the general rolls around. By the time voting day comes, I think he's going to be the guy.
What's going to be the issue that you think makes it a slam dunk over Hillary?
Gosh, so many things. I think Trump is exciting people, motivating people. I think people trust Trump more than Hillary.
Would you acknowledge, Sam, would you acknowledge that he's energizing people against him as well, and that he may be the guy, he may be the energizer bunny that turns out the support that Hillary doesn't seem to generate on her own?
To a degree, but I think people turn out for something more than they turn out against something.
Kitty, you don't think so?
Statistically, people do not want another Bush or Clinton.
Right.
No, I wish that the caller was right, but statistically, over time, over the last 20 or so elections, people who are motivated more easily negatively. That's why campaigns run negative ads, because they work. That said, I wish your caller was right. I wish that we could motivate voters positively.
Well, ma'am, you know, I've been saying Trump since last July. We'll see what happens. And by the way, illegal immigrants cost us about $100 billion a year.
Sam, listen, thank you very much for your call. 1-800-723-8289, wherever you're listening, from coast to coast. Lots of callers on the line tonight. Great to hear from everybody. We've got another full hour coming up, 1-800-723-8289. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the president in Cuba.
Eight years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
The biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Come on, back in Chicago, we're starting to get some tweets and email comments. Hello, Mr. Dumont. How about this scenario? This is from a gentleman by the name of Rudy Ordonez, and he writes, Republicans throw their support and money to Gary Johnson and the Libertarian Party. He is a proven leader, a former Republican. The Libertarian Party is an established party already. How's that for throwing a monkey wrench into the system? Your reaction, Bruno.
I have said the same thing. It's an option. He's a former two-term former New Mexico governor. Did very, very well with an issue that I think even the people at this table all agree on, and that is spending cuts. Very fiscally conservative. And he could probably get a lot of young people with his pro-pot, you know, viewpoint. But
would the establishment – could the establishment go for someone who's close to legalization of marijuana?
This is the wonderful thing about breaking up all the parties is that all of a sudden you're – reasonable people are free to take non-doctrinaire positions.
Go where they want to go.
And go where they want to go. And it would be wonderful to see. I would love to see Gary Johnson win two states and withhold 270 from Hillary.
And the states that marijuana has been legalized in, it's made a lot of money and created
a lot of Bernie supporters could go, right? No, I don't mean that in a pejorative way. I mean, you know, you made the point that, you know, a lot of the Sanders supporters are say, well, you know, they'll be upset, but they will go over and they'll eventually support Hillary. Having been at the Bernie Sanders rally last week when Hillary Clinton's name was mentioned at the Auditorium Theater, I mean, 3,500 people booed. I mean, but a lot of those that are, they're young folks. This is their first campaign. I'm not sure they're going to run out and support Hillary Clinton. Gary Johnson could be an alternative to them if he's a viable candidate.
He's not giving them free college.
Right.
Which isn't really free, by the way.
Right. Bernie's supporters are primarily motivated by this economic populism, which Bernie and Trump can co-write a new book called The Art of the Pander, because they both say things that they either know aren't true or they don't know aren't true and someone should tell them. For example, I don't have to lie for a living. So manufacturing jobs are not coming back.
But if Johnson were given a platform to be able to actually share his ideas, I think some of these younger voters might actually see some connection to the Libertarian Party and see that as a viable option.
Especially if it was viewed as it was a three-way race for the presidency,
sure.
Then he would get more exposure, which he doesn't.
I think it's unlikely, but I think the message might draw them.
We've invited him to be a guest on this program many times, but he's never been available. So we will ask Gary Johnson again. Yeah, here's another email comment. This was unsigned. I can't believe the arrogance and stupidity of your panel member who threw out the comment that Trump supporters are low information or low intelligence. This is you, Mr. Masiotra. Please inform him that I have a master's degree. I'm magna cum laude, a Phi Beta Kappa. I have also followed politics my entire life, and people are fed up with people like your panel member who is so snobbish he thinks he is in a class by himself.
Well,
that could be true.
Statistics, this voter is maybe not part of the statistical norm of the breakout of all of the Trump voters from the elections up until now.
People are reacting to what they heard on the radio. Here's Robert Vera.
We wouldn't want
I'm a physician. I'm a Mexican-American. I will vote against Hillary. There you go. He doesn't say he's voting for Trump.
Yeah, we don't know. Maybe he's voting for Bernie.
Let's go to Mark in Arlington, Virginia, listening to us on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Go ahead. Nice to have you with us, Mark.
Hey, you know, you were talking about Gary Johnson earlier. I can actually get you in contact with him, and he will be on your show.
Great.
But I wanted to circle back to this one particular point. The Commission on Presidential Debates is a rigged system designed to prevent anyone but Republicans or Democrats
from
ever getting on the stage.
Yeah, absolutely.
And until we acknowledge it, now there's a lawsuit going on that is has the same, I would say, degree of pressure that Citizens United would. Because if we had enough people on the stage in terms of if you have enough votes in enough states that you could get 270 theoretically, then you should be included in the debates. And last time that would have included Jill Stein, the Green, and Gary Johnson, the Libertarian. Now, how would we be as a culture where we have 20 or 30 different types of soap, but we're still restricted by ballot access laws and campaign laws that are not designed to increase dialogue, but to stifle competition in the political arena?
Mark, I totally agree with your comments about the Presidential Commission. This is why this year might be a little bit different. If Donald Trump is the Republican nominee, and the Republican establishment has been looking for a way to have a third-party alternative, their money, their clout, they probably swim in the same pools, go to the same social circles as the members of that commission. If Donald Trump ends up being the Republican nominee, they might want to bend a little bit this year to let at least one other, maybe two other, independent candidates into that debate. But I think you're absolutely right. At the moment, it's rigged.
I don't know why people are afraid of more voices and more ideas. To me, it can just make our government stronger.
It makes it so difficult for the networks. So, you know, they have all these things that they've got to deal with.
Oh,
that
give
was
me
in
a break.
Response
they figured out how to have 17. They figured out how to have 17 people or 19 people on the stage together.
That was,
they could easily have four.
Historically, though, Bruno was talking about Ross Perot earlier. That was in response to Perot's success. Because before the debates in 92, his poll numbers were very low. After the debates, they jumped up dramatically.
Right, sure.
And the two parties, who might disagree on a lot, they did coalesce to say, how can we keep outsiders out of the debates?
Which is why it's such – I mean, the caller is absolutely correct. It is such a rigged game, and it does not benefit – it doesn't – see, and this is – so all of my friends, I've got a lot of people who are – there, and some of them are very smart, by the way. I know some smart people who are pro-Trump because they are fed up. But I will tell anybody and everybody this. Stop being afraid of breaking up the GOP. Stop being afraid of costing Trump or costing Kasich an election and just break it all up. And let the Democrats break up too. I don't think they're as prone to breaking up as the GOP is, but let it break up. Let it happen. Stop supporting the two-party system. It's bad for America.
And we wonder why our voter turnout is so low compared to other countries. I mean, maybe this is one of the reasons.
Could
maybe
be.
Because we don't let other voices, you know, in Sweden, where they have more than 85% voter turnout, they have a lot of parties. And when they have debates, everybody gets up and says what they think. People can choose who they want to support.
More people feel represented.
Unfortunately, though, the way the systems, and it's not just the Presidential Debate Commission, it's also the election laws in each one of the states and how to get a ballot. It's a great pipe dream, but right now I think it's a pipe dream to say that you're going to be able to shift all these systems in place that are set up for the two-party system.
Let's go to Sophia. She's listening in Dayton, Ohio on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Go ahead, Sophia.
Hi. I was just wondering for your opinions, should Trump win? How do you feel the legislature would actually work with him, whether it's all Republican or half Republican, half Democratic?
Well, I think that – let me take the first crack at it. I think if the existing power structure is in place, where you've got Mitch McConnell and you've got Speaker Ryan – I think they will represent the establishment wing of the Republican Party, and they will be somewhat of a tempering measure on Donald Trump. And this is what I've said before. If you believe that immigration is the key issue, and you really believe that Donald Trump says it and believes when he says he's going to deport, you know, 11 or 12 million people, none of that is going to happen without congressional involvement. And I don't care what the results of the election is. the Congress of the United States, whether it's the one we have now or one that might follow. They are not going to support the idea of rounding up 11 or 12 million people. It's not going to happen. They may build the wall, but the deportation will never happen. Back shortly.
Eight years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and again, we have another email coming in here, which I'm going to read. Good evening, Mr. Dumont. I have been a listener of your Sunday evening show for several years on WRNN here in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. There have been a few times where I have vehemently disagreed with your Democratic guests and also with your left-leaning Republicans, the RINOs. I have never been as angry before as I was in the first hour of your show tonight. You, Bruce, allowed some left-leaning RINO moron state that Donald Trump's supporters are people of the lowest and no education without much of a challenge at all. I take it that means that you are of the same opinion, and you too, Bruce, are an establishment RINO. I am insulted. I could actually believe that I was hearing, although I was not surprised. Every other Donald Trump supporter that I know is educated in one way or another. Education is not only a thing printed on a piece of paper, bestowing a degree upon someone. I have three of those, by the way. Much of the education comes from non-traditional forms and is earned by life experience. I earned my education on paper, and from over 20 years serving in the United States Armed Services, life experience is education and most certainly does not count. Yes, Mr. Dumont, I am just a little bit insulted by your ignorance. Your show just lost a reliable listener. Well, we're sorry, Olin. We've lost you, but hopefully we'll get a few more. Let's go to Zach in Youngstown, Ohio. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I sort of fall into the same boat as the other guy. I have 2 degrees. Not all of us are angry Trump supporters. I did want to touch on the pandering to China. And I'll be the first to say I think Donald Trump is full of empty rhetoric, full of hot air. You don't know where he stands. But when he panders on the China issue to uneducated and lower-income voters, really what he's pandering to is the fact that a lot of these jobs in manufacturing that didn't require an education have been shipped overseas. Now, that being said, I think the low education thing is sort of a red herring because, you know, I have 2 bachelor's degrees. They're not all they're cracked up to be as far as not so much being overqualified for a position, but the bachelor's degrees are a dime a dozen. Now, I'm from Youngstown, Ohio. When you looked at that electoral map on Super Tuesday 2 or 3 or whatever we're calling it now, you saw reliably it was all, I think I watched CNN, it was all dark red for Trump. And the reason is the manufacturing facilities have left this area, and people who don't have the education and don't have the income to get the education without taking out a staggering amount of student debt end up connecting with that, and that's what they see. But again, not all of us are angry in that. The last point I'd like to make is you know what you get with Hillary Clinton. You know what you get with John Kasich. They have voting records. With Trump, he's flipped so many times, you don't know what you get. And I'm so fed up. I've been a reliable Democrat for years, voting for Obama twice, which to me it was a mistake just based on Fourth Amendment grounds. By rolling the dice with Trump, I really think that it might be the only chance because you don't know what you're going to get. And at this point, I'd rather deal with the devil. I don't. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay, listen. Thank you very much for your comment. Bruno.
Well, he's making some very, very interesting points. And to the first caller whose tweet you read, or the tweeter who says he's not listening to you anymore, I'm the RINO, but I did not insult the Trump voters. I think that was
Democrat.
It was the Democrat. Yeah, but because I'm a Kasich guy, so I'm clearly a RINO.
By the way, let me just stop for a second. Part of this, and by the way, I certainly did not mean to demean anyone being of lower intellect. who support Donald Trump. I think, to the contrary, I've made the point over the months that we've talked about Donald Trump, that's not the case. Donald Trump is the one recently who talked about, I love the poorly educated. He was the one that drew the line between people. He was getting support from everyone, but he's the one that used the term, I love the poorly educated. And I guess if I was poorly educated, I think I might have been insulted by that. But a lot of those who are poorly educated are not insulted by it, at least at this moment.
Let me just try and very quickly finish this point. The other thing that he said that I think is fascinating, and I've been trying to make this point, is he said, I'm willing to go for the devil I don't know now.
That was fascinating.
And that might be that one thin reed that maybe a lot of people come out and try and do that because they're so fed up with conventionalism. And that might be what maybe none of us are really seeing, that Trump could possibly win or do better than expected. And because I would say this to America, but I would say that this is where the third party is the better option, because that's also a devil we don't know. And I think it's time to start courting that kind of thinking, as opposed to just saying, well, you have two flavors, flavor left and flavor right in Hillary or Jeb or Hillary or Kasich. And it would be wonderful to see something like that really happen. But I just don't think Trump is the guy.
I would say that this is why I keep saying Trump has the possibility of winning, because there are people out there that are just tired of people that have been in government and the establishment. And whether on the Hillary side, she represents somebody that's been involved, and whether you like it or not, Trump represents something fresh. And although the third party option is an option, Trump is energizing people. People know his name and he speaks to them. I don't think you're going to get the traction on the third party that Trump's got.
I want to ask another question on a completely different subject, and that is the Supreme Court nominee has been put forward by President Obama, Merrick Garland. Is there any chance, Bruno, that Mitch McConnell will change his mind and give Garland a vote, even, let's say, in the lame duck session?
I don't know what the polls are going to look like, but I would say that he should be. I think there's something there's nothing unprecedented about a party letting hearings take place and then voting a nominee down. There is something unprecedented, or maybe very little precedent, to simply saying, we're not even going to give this guy a hearing. And again, this is insane. McConnell knows better than this, but he's acting as if he doesn't want to get Boehnered by his Senate colleagues by simply letting a hearing take place. But I would say, let the hearing take place, and if the guy's no good, vote him down.
We have a constitution. We have a process. You know, people are talking about, well, I think it was McConnell, in fact, who said, well, you know, we need to listen to the people. Well, we listened to the people. They elected Barack Obama. They also elected Mitch McConnell in a Republican Senate. But, you know, so let the process go. We have rules. We have a constitution. This is why we have it.
But there's nothing in the constitution that says there has to be a timely vote on who the
nominee is. No, but there's a lot in precedent. There is a lot in Senate precedent.
But again,
and Mitch McConnell knows way more about that than I do.
I mean, I think the mistake that Mitch McConnell made was, within 24 hours after Justice Scalia's death, he makes the point that there's not going to be any vote on the Supreme Court. Well, that, to me, was stupid, because it gave the Democrats an issue. He could have just let the court, you know, let things move along.
Exactly.
Certainly the Senate knows how to slow things down.
Everybody,
the word could have gone out that we're not going to pass anybody.
Right.
But why do you make that statement to the public? You give the Democrats an issue, just like Mitch McConnell did shortly after Barack Obama was elected, when he said, we're going to make Barack Obama a one-term president. I mean, this was used on every fundraising mail. I mean, he makes some very stupid statements for a majority leader of the Senate.
And this is, that's my thought as well, is there's a lot of posturing going on that was certainly political posturing, but it may cost him the Republicans some key Republican seats in the Senate, because I think the public says, you know, why shouldn't this be? I mean, when you look at Judge Garland, and you look at what the response, I think most people know that the president is supposed to nominate somebody for the Supreme Court. I don't think it helps the Republican case on the Senate side by this political posturing.
And this is not a defense of Mitch McConnell's unforced error, which I agree with everybody saying that was a mistake. The one thing I will say is that if the situations were reversed, I mean, if Ruth Bader Ginsburg had passed away in the last 11 months of George W. Bush's administration, there is no way period, end of story, ever. They might not have made the same mistake of making a comment on it, but there is no way that they would have even heard, or maybe they would have had hearings, but they would never have voted on a GOP nominee.
I think they would have had hearings, voted it, and voted it down.
Right.
I mean, we are kind of wedded to process.
This falls into a pattern of Republican refusal to govern. I mean, McConnell and others are reflexively obstinate. There's even bipartisan bills that should have been bipartisan, like increasing veterans benefits. The Republicans blocked infrastructural spending. Republicans blocked refinancing student loans so that not debt forgiveness, but just refinancing student loans like any other loan so that they can lower the interest rate. Republicans blocked. Democrats might be guilty as charged if Trump becomes president or Kasich, but right now what we've witnessed over the past 7 years is this reflexive obstinacy that is more interested in blocking President Obama, attempting to embarrass
him,
progress administration.
I'm going to give a different interpretation. How about doing for those constituents that elect you exactly what they want you to do?
Which is not govern.
In many cases,
yeah.
Maybe that's the case. But again, the point is, on one case, we're saying that Republicans in the hinterlands, they don't like leadership because leadership is not doing what they want them to do. And you're saying that in this particular case, they may be doing what the constituents want them to do, but it's not good enough.
It's six of one, half a dozen the other, because the interesting thing is, and I'd have to dig up the article, but I did post on it, is the fact is that when the Reid Senate ended and the McConnell Senate took over, bills started passing like crazy. Actually, Mitch McConnell unlocked bills that Harry Reid was keeping bottled up. So, yes, we know that what I would agree with my friends across the table here that and with you that this was a mistake, that what he did. But you can't say that McConnell has been obstructive when, in fact, he ended a whole era of Reid obstruction, that Reid didn't want the Senate to vote on it because he didn't want to put his people on record for a vote so they might not lose their election.
I want to ask a quick question here. It's getting back to turnout and getting back to reaching out and who the Trump base is, and does he reach out to people that don't vote. Would you acknowledge that if you're a Trump voter and you go to the polls to vote for Donald Trump, you more than likely are going to vote for the Republican member of Congress and the Senate when you go? Does everybody agree with that?
I think if those Republican members have not supported Trump, I don't think they vote for him.
And that's, I tend to agree with that. That put simply, yes, they vote Republican, but they don't. And if they
back Charlie from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We're going to switch gears for a segment or two, and that's talk about President Obama. President Obama landed just a few hours ago in Havana, Cuba, first president in 90 years to do so. And we've had some discussions on this program about the wisdom of opening up relations with Cuba. Bruno, where do you come down on this? Are you you're sort of libertarian? Is this does this fit into your important issues?
It's not a super important issue, but I will say that I have been moderate on the Iran deal, and I have been moderate on this Cuban thing. Because at some point in time, you have to step back from the decades-long distrust and nonsense and say, can we find a way to make, you know, to bring back normalcy in some of these relations? And Cuba I'm pretty certain I disagree with Obama's showering and benefiting. I mean, if I were to do something like this, I would do it to end the Castro regime, not save it. And that's what bothers me about this. But at the end of the day, when you're making peace with the country that you haven't had peace with, and you're going to have pretty soon have nice hotels and casinos and places to go there in the next 5 or 10 or 20 years, go ahead and do it.
David Masiotra, how do you come down on this?
It's an inspired and effective maneuver. Free market capitalism.
Should he meet with the dissidents?
Absolutely.
Yes, he should. But free market capitalism is vastly superior to central planning. And whenever, whether it's the Soviet Union, whether it was Czechoslovakia, whenever the countries begin, or Berlin, when the, before the Berlin Wall fell, whenever countries or cities begin to open up to consumerism, capitalism, entrepreneurialism, socialism and communism, whatever it is, falls apart almost instantly. And that kind of pressure coming to bear on Cuban society will ignite a revolution, if one might say, just a quiet one, amongst consumers and workers who want choice, who want liberty, who want opportunity,
well,
who want mobility.
I think there's a lot of pie in the sky with that. I don't think necessarily all of that's going to happen rather quickly. Nick?
I think it's a good move. I support the move. I think it's a time to find the way to heal that. I, like Bruno, I don't know if I agree to the extent, particularly in the sense that, you know, there is some question still about the Castro regime. And, but I do agree in some ways with David as well, that by getting some more American trade and making things a little better in Cuba, that it might inspire some minds to change. But the government's got to let it change.
The Castro regime has actually used our boycott in their favor for the last 50 years. You know, they use us as we're the bad guys. The only people we've been hurting for the past 50 years are the people. I think it's right mm-hmm. that he meets with the dissidents. I think he could go a long way to opening up.
He really is going to meet with the dissidents?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You're sure?
I know that he is. We work with dissidents down there, and I know that he is. We need to open up the internet there, and the government could change within a couple of months.
Oh, no, we should mention, only 5% of the Cuban people have access to the internet, and the average monthly salary is $20 a month. $20 a month.
So. And when you were talking about opening up casinos and everything, there's stuff there. There are beautiful hotels, there are yes. beautiful casinos. No Americans are making money from them, but the Canadians, the Spanish, everybody's making money in Cuba, but none of it is filtering down to the workers is the problem.
Which is the reason why I don't know if I believe in just kind of this opening relations the way we have, because I don't know if it's going to translate into the hope, because I do know some personal stories of people that are from that area and they need hope, but I don't think that they're going to get it.
Some of the new investment that goes in down there, a percentage of the ownership has to be Cuban. So in other words, you have to be in business with Marriott. Obviously, it's all the tourism thing. And this is, you know, from my trip last June when I was in Havana. That's why they are excited. In other words, there is going to be this opportunity for them to sort of experiment in entrepreneurism. But again, they are going to be dealing with multinational corporations, many of which are based in the United States, virtually all of which are tied into tourism.
You're correct that it won't happen instantly. And if I implied that, then I was wrong. But I've written 3 books about rock and roll. So thank you for having me here, by the way. I feel like the black sheep of the table. The Soviet Union banned jazz and rock and roll records. The reason they did that is because they also banned Hollywood films and Levi jeans. The reason they did that is because once people experienced the pleasure and power of consumer choice and the creativity and variety that it ushers into a culture, they're going to very quickly begin to demand that their system of government embrace an economy that allows them to not only enjoy it, but create it themselves. So eventually, that transition will occur. Not instantly, but eventually.
And a lot of the dissidents are the hip-hop artists
exactly.
in Havana. But
and Mick Jagger, the Rolling Stones are going there, next month?
Yeah. The critical part, and I don't know how you do this or I would get paid a lot more than I do. The critical part is making sure that the new influx of money somehow trickles down
filters
to the
down.
Worker.
That's the point.
Somehow
I mean,
that people
get
paid
to,
more.
Yeah.
And then I
think all these
that.
Things that we're talking about are possibilities, but having, if it I think enriches we were in a better bargaining think, position think, to do
but
that.
But I think a lot. I think a lot of the multinational corporations, if the average salary is $20 a month, I'm sure they would be very benevolent and say, "Okay, we'll make it $35 a month," and they'll. That would
yeah,
be a
but
big
the Spanish
increase,
corporations
again,
and the and
well, the
can,
Spanish corporations
can,
almost,
and the Canadian corporations no. they haven't done it.
No, they haven't. And why have they not done that?
I don't know. This is what if I got
because
paid a lot
the,
more
because
they don't
the,
have to.
Because the stockholders in those companies, they like to keep wages down, whether it's in communist Cuba or whether it's in Beirut or wherever they're buying, wherever their holdings are.
Yeah.
I mean that's what corporations is, do. They want to make.
Where
as
can
much,
I produce it cheaper?
Where can I produce it cheaper? And I will tell you that having been there, the basic tourism structure of not only Havana but within 90 miles around Havana in inland, not obviously 90 miles is Miami, but the reality is it's there. I mean. A lot of spackle and a lot of paint and a lot of construction jobs could make Havana and make much of what I saw in Cuba basically look like South Beach and look like South Florida. I mean, without a lot of time. And they certainly have workers that could get it done quickly. Politically, I want to go back politically to where we are insofar as, the as it relates to the campaign. Is Cuba going to be an issue in this campaign? Is anybody going to stand up and say Marco Rubio was the only obvious one in the race?
With him out of the race, I don't see it being an issue.
And honestly, it's a generational thing. The voters in Florida who really were anti-Castro and were anti-involvement with Cuba, they're largely dead or dying. The younger Cubans.
Yeah, and the Cold War is over, so it's not going to play with the general public.
I want to come back.
The only way it becomes a political issue is if something goes wrong between now and the election. Yeah. But I think that's
something
I want to come back to. I want to come back to sort of the political calendar because we talked about March Madness, and again, this has been one heck of a month, not only for politics but also for basketball. But I want to take a moment and look at the month of April. By the way, we should mention we've got Utah and we have Arizona coming up this Tuesday. But in the month of April, on April 5th, Wisconsin, which could be another very pivotal battle, both for the Republicans and Democrats. 42 delegates, that is a primary. That's a winner-take-all primary. Then April 19th, New York, with 95 delegates. And then on April 25th, in about a month, we have Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, all primaries. And obviously Pennsylvania is the big one there with 71 delegates. And as I look at that list of states, those are states that conceivably John Kasich could do well.
He
won't. I don't think he's going to win any of them. But
and it also matters how many of them are winner take all. I wrestle with this as a, and I know which side I come down on. But as a Kasich supporter, I keep on asking myself, do you want Kasich to get out so that Cruz can deny Trump enough delegates so it goes to an open convention? But then you have a convention where you're left between Trump and Cruz and anything that happens outside of that. But if Kasich stays in, does he guarantee that Trump gets 1237 by stopping Cruz?
But I thought you had to win. You had to be a winner in eight states before you're eligible. And he's only been a winner in one state.
Well, as we've talked about before, those rules could be repealed prior to the voting.
But as of right now, you have to win 12 states, right?
As of right now, and that's kind of the controversial rule number 40 that's in play. Mm-hmm. You to be nominated under the current rules, which could be changed, you have to have won eight states. Delegates and you have to have won eight states.
So Cruz and Trump are in. But Kasich is not.
At this point. But if they repeal or change rule number 40, even if Kasich pulls out, it might
I would be so ticked off if people were changing the rules, whether I was for Donald Trump or just an observer.
But they do it every year.
I know, but it's a bad idea.
Convention.
It's a bad idea.
I don't know for sure at the Republican convention, but at our Democratic convention, the first order of business at every convention is to convene the rules under which the convention will be held. Like, that's the first thing you have to do.
Here's the big rule I have for the Democratic Party. Why is it that you have your winner-take-all situation? But, I mean, it seems to me that your issue of superdelegates is rigged against the people. It's the people in the back room. Why is the Democratic Party so undemocratic in that field?
It's actually gotten much more democratic, and the whole superdelegate situation was opened up under what you were talking about earlier for Jesse Jackson. After Jesse Jackson's candidacy, the whole superdelegate situation was actually opened up quite a bit and expanded to have more superdelegates. Who could, you know, and they're not
superdelegates are by definition they are the establishment delegates. They're going to keep the lid on what the people may really want, whether in the Democratic Party.
But there are more minorities and more women.
Bernie Sanders would be doing a lot better without superdelegates. Kitty Kurth, David Masiotra, Nick Kacharubas, Bruno Barron, thanks for being with us. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE. The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce Dumont back on Sunday night on Beyond the Beltway. That's the final word in Sunday Talk, wherever you're listening on America's great radio station, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, as well as television stations in Chicago, again, every Sunday night right here. And we hope that you come back each and every week. We've got lots more to talk about. Nick, this is our last segment. So I want to go back to where we began this program, and that is the way in which the Republican establishment is trying to stop Donald Trump. Do you think that is a movement is it growing, or is it going to fizzle out just because of the difficulty of pulling this off without completely infuriating people that are going to go to Cleveland to vote for Donald Trump?
I think at this point it is growing. I'm not sure if it's a smart growth because, again, that issue that you have about does this blow up. But I think there are some party leaders that are really starting to take some of Bruno's positions and saying, you know what, maybe we need to lose the presidential election in order to rebuild the party because we don't want to be associated with what might happen if Donald Trump is our nominee. But I think that's a calculated risk that is seriously factoring into people's minds.
Are the disruptions at the Trump rallies, do they help Donald Trump? In other words, as the national media constantly keeps focusing on Donald Trump and the violence at the rallies or the skirmishes at the rally, it's not so much violence as skirmishes. Does that help Donald Trump? Because if you're out there out in TV land, you're seeing the national news media generally talk about what a horrible thing has happened to the Trump rally. They are primarily talking about Trump supporters, much so than they are the protesters.
I think, obviously we will see in the next week if Trump is able to still win these electoral victories. But from what we saw in Illinois, where there was a riot protest and Trump
skirmish. It was not a riot.
Yes, a skirmish. Yes. Where Trump didn't. He still won Illinois pretty well.
Right.
And so I think at this point, I'm going to say it goes to help him, but it does solidify more the establishment stepping against him.
I want to talk about a rally because you went to the Trump rally. I went to the Trump rally. The rally, in my view, first of all, it was not a riot.
Absolutely not.
There was selective scuffles within the crowd, which is the way I reported it. The news media, you know, they did use the term riot, and certainly in some of the cases that followed what happened in Chicago, you had a demonstrator who was being walked out, and in one case in North Carolina, he was sucker punched, and last night or yesterday in Arizona, he was sucker punched and then beaten up and choked and or not choked but kicked quite a bit. Is Donald Trump responsible for that action?
my worry is that he is kind of inciting it. And if you remember at that Trump rally, I'm a political organizer. I went there absolutely as a spectator. I had guests in from out of town.
You're not
a
closet Trump supporter. That's what you're saying. Okay, go
ahead. I might be in one case. I'll get to that in a second. But, you know, and I positioned myself deliberately so I could see the stage and the crowd and the upper, you know, wanted to be able to see what the press was seeing, the whole deal. The announcement that they made before Trump spoke, it was kind of scary and weird and ominous. Donald Trump supports your First Amendment rights and your Second Amendment rights. And if you see a protester, go and stand next to him and shout at him the police. Trump, Trump, Trump. But the whole tone of it and the notion of it, I have never heard an announcement like that at another political event in my entire 56 years.
Trump's absolutely responsible. This isn't happening at anyone else's rallies.
And it hasn't happened at anybody else's rallies. And I mean, look, I think
that's what I'm saying.
Very, very good manipulator of media, and everything he does cleverly and for his own benefit.
Last night you had a protester who was either wrapped in a flag or had a flag shirt on. I couldn't tell by the video. He's walking out. An African American supporter of Donald Trump punched him, a good punch, and then he started to kick him. And then Trump made the comment when he was on television today that the woman trailing that person had a Ku Klux Klan, a pillow over her head. And Trump said that the person that got beat up also had one and had just taken it off. So if you are a protester, first of all, you've gone to the lion's den. You want to get in the faces of the people that are there. That's why you protest. Mm-hmm. Someone asked you to leave. You're being walked out. You're dressed in Ku Klux Klan garb. At least one person clearly was. And an African American is incensed by that and gives somebody a punch. Am I missing something in the interpretation here about what the dynamic could have been? And Donald Trump wasn't even at the rally.
But there's leadership. And I can't imagine President Obama, President Bush, President Clinton enumerate every single president saying, I'd like to punch him in the face.
You're right about
knock
that.
Him out.
No
I'll pay the legal
that.
Fees.
There's,
when Trump agree, says totally that, he that. Encourages the violence.
Well, what's happening here, Bruce, is I think that the whole feel of all of this stuff has now changed. And you've read all these short stories and fiction stories, but this is what happens when you unleash a mob.
Yes.
And you're starting to see, and this is what has me worried.
What about the instigators?
The rally in Chicago
was organized by MoveOn.org, some socialist groups in Chicago, some Bernie Sanders supporters, orchestrated by Bill Ayers, who was a professor at the University of Illinois. Those are facts.
Yes.
And you cannot tell me
the rally was organized by Donald Trump. They showed up. It was very easy to get tickets. They went online and got tickets.
The protesters were organized.
Yes,
and I'm just saying is the protesting now.
Why did Trump choose a school?
I totally agree.
Can I finish? Why did Trump deliberately choose a school that has more first-generation immigrant students than any other school?
Because he may have wanted an incident. I said that last week. I made that point. All I'm just saying is that from now on, as we look at Trump disruptions, wherever they may be, I think we have to look at to what extent were they instigators? To what extent is this part of an organized effort now to stop Donald Trump because they don't want Donald Trump to get the Republican nominee? And what is the question? Why do they not want Donald Trump to get the nomination? I think they're worried that he could be elected. That's my point. We are out of time. Thank you all for being with us this evening. I'm Bruce Dumont. So long until next Sunday night. Good night from Chicago.
Eight years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. It was to see Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.